What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Big One Podcast. We are on Twitter at Podcast Big One, emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. This is going to be a second week in a row with a solo episode from Baby G because B-Boy is hitting up SoCal. He is in San Diego, and he is checking out the track that NASCAR is going to in 2 weeks. So Coronado Naval Base is coming up for the first time ever for the NASCAR Cup Series and the NASCAR Truck Series. I'm not sure if the O'Reilly Series is going there. I've been seeing a lot of news about what drivers are in the trucks. I haven't seen anything about O'Reilly's, which leads me to believe that it's just going to be a doubleheader weekend with Cup and Truck. So more updates from B-Boy on that next week on the podcast. And he sent a message that he was hanging out with Daniel Suarez at a San Diego Padres game. Suarez was throwing out the first pitch. B-Boy sent a message that he asked Suarez if he wanted to come hang out at a bar after the baseball game, and I haven't heard back yet since then, so we're either going to have an absolutely epic story or we're going to have an epic fail. It's going to be nowhere in between, guys. So this podcast, we talk motorsports, mostly NASCAR, a lot of Formula One. Baby G is your IndyCar guy, and I am scratching the itch to get out to the local tracks here in my state. So we're going to be talking about that hopefully within the next couple of weeks. Jumping right into the storylines this week, we've got a couple of driver silly season updates. The first one being Denny Hamlin confirms on the Prime post-race show that Brent Cruz will take over the 11 after he retires at the end of 2027. That's not surprising news. Denny Hamlin has been saying for a couple of seasons that he doesn't have that many left in him, but it's honestly surprising to hear a driver at the top of their game. He's winning multiple races a season. He's contending for a championship. He should have won the championship last year if that yellow flag didn't come out and he gets beat on a late restart. Larson wins the championship. It's hard to see a guy like this say that he's just going to walk away at the peak of his talent. This is a guy who, he's not a young guy anymore. He's in his 40s. It may just be that he wants to spend more time with his family, his kids. He's got the 2311 race team that he can run one-off races when he wants to. He can go drive trucks. He can go drive O'Reilly's. He can do whatever he wants in a race car. And honestly, maybe he's just over the grind of this 38-week NASCAR season. So big news there. Denny Hamlin retiring from the 11 car in 2027. And I'll be honest, I don't know much of anything about Brent Cruz. All I know is he's very young. And this is very concerning for a guy who does not have a lot of experience in NASCAR. We've seen it with Connor Zilich, right? Rookie phenom. Won 11 races in O'Reilly's last year, and he can't even finish races in the Cup Series. Hell, he can't even finish stage one in the Cup Series right now. So I would be very nervous. JGR, bringing a guy as young as Brent Cruz into the 11 car, you're not going to win races for a very, very long time, and you better be ready for that. Next storyline is another driver who is not going to be back with the Wood Brothers in the 21 car next year, and that is Josh Berry. So this is a guy who has really, really struggled in the 21 car. Obviously, the Wood Brothers don't have the best equipment out there. It's a very historic team in the NASCAR Cup Series. They've been around forever, right? Almost since the beginning of time in NASCAR. And Josh Berry, unfortunately, isn't performing up to Cup standards. He's got one win in the Cup Series that came at Las Vegas. And when that happened, a lot of people thought, okay, here's a guy who, he did well in O'Reilly's, formerly Xfinity, when he was in it, but the Cup Series results just haven't been there, and the Wood Brothers are moving on. A little bit earlier of a record this week, so not a whole lot of storylines. Honestly, we're in the middle of the season for the NASCAR Series. a lot of things have kind of settled in and we're just kind of riding around. We're going track to track. We're doing things. So what we're going to do now is we're going to recap the Truck and Cup Series races from Michigan. First up is the Truck Series. This was on Saturday afternoon, a very bizarre start time, 12:30 Central Time in the heat of the day out there in Michigan, which don't love that for the fans, but I will say the fans turned up for this one. And they had a really nice crowd for the Truck Series. It looked a little bit iffy on TV because they had all of the stands piled into the center sections around start finish. So really when, you know, they pan out, it looks like the grandstands are totally dead. But then when they kind of just show you where the people are, there's tons and tons of people, tons of sections open, and a really nice crowd there for the Truck Series at Michigan. Stage 1 winner, Christopher Bell. Stage 2 winner, Christopher Bell. And your race winner is Corey Heim. Getting into the racing action for this one, Christopher Bell and Carson Hoelsterweijer are both at the front to end stage 1. And Ty Majeski, who had a really nice run there in stage 1, he ended up fading and falling back and just could not keep his tires from wearing. And like I said, Bell won stage 1. Stage 2 also won Christopher Bell, just a total can of whoop-ass. He really just had control of this thing the entire race in Stage 1 and Stage 2, so really not a whole lot to talk about out there for the Truck Series. Later on in this race, Corey Heim had an issue on pit road, which sometimes when you have a guy who's really good in the Truck Series like Corey Heim, and he has a penalty, an issue on pit road, something along those lines that puts him deep and buried in the field, it's going to be a really fun car to watch because he was just slicing and dicing through the field. In these trucks, you can pack air on the left rear. It's going to disturb the back end of that car. The car is going to go up the track. The truck is going to go up the track. And then you just drop down, shoot past him with a little slingshot move. And that's what Corey Heim was doing throughout the entire second stage, which was super, super fun to see. Love to see that. This is a guy who lost his 11 ride to Caden Honeycutt, and he is on a mission this year to get wins and prove that he should still be in that seat. And you know what? He's the guy who's going to be going to the Cup Series like we talked about last week. So joke's on you, Honeycutt. You're going to be down in the trucks, and Heim is going to be cashing Cup Series paychecks. Another ugly performance by Cletus McFarland here in the Truck Series. He sucks. He's spinning himself out in these trucks. He has no idea what he's doing. It's extremely easy to go out there and drive some little Crown Vic car, think you're hot shit on your own track, but this guy is nowhere near ready. I am so over seeing this guy. Every time I see him on a O'Reilly Series roster, if I see him on a Truck Series lineup, you know he's going to cause a minimum of 2 crashes. At least one of those is going to be a single spin. The second one's usually going to be messing up getting on or off of pit road, or he's straight up just driving into people and wrecking multiple other cars' days. And the worst part about it is this guy gets out of the car and they interview him and he has this cringe like, hey, I'm just having so much fun. I'm learning so much out here in the Truck Series. Dude, you're not learning shit. You're wrecking extremely good race cars. You're taking seats away from guys with real talent. And back to ARCA you go. I don't care that you're getting money and bringing money to these teams. At a certain point, they're going to do the math and be like, this guy's just going to fucking wreck my car. I don't care what he's bringing for sponsorship. It's a waste of a seat. We're not going to win any money in the race. And he's going to trash my car. And we're going to have to just scrap it because this guy's a joke. Later on, near the end of this race, Carson Hoelsterweijer seemed like he had like a hot dog wrapper or some paper or something on his grill with around 15 laps to go. So they were trying to do this little aerodynamic slipstream pass with another car. They were driving past each other. Hoelsterweijer's putting his nose right up on the guy's bumper and trying to get the air to get disturbed off the front of his truck and lift that wrapper off. So that was really funny to see. And I honestly don't know if they ever were successful, but sometimes you'll see that at these tracks, right? The wind gets blowing, stuff gets flying out of the track. It's famous at the track where you get all the hot dog wrappers. I believe that's Martinsville, and you'll get those Martinsville hot dog wrappers stuck on the front grill of the cup cars a lot of time. And you'll see them doing this little aero move to just get some air on that front bumper and get it to fly off. Late in the race on this one, as I mentioned, Corey Heim outdrives Caden Honeycutt to take the lead, and then he ends up blocking him multiple times on the last couple of laps. So Honeycutt would get a little bit of a run, and showing his inexperience with the superior truck, he still could not get the pass done because Heim was doing a masterclass job of doing mirror driving, listening to his sponsor, taking away Caden Honeycutt's line, taking away his run, and ultimately just blocking him and getting it done and winning that race. So great job by Corey Heim at the Michigan Truck Series race. Moving right along on this episode to the Cup Series race from Michigan, we had Stage 1 winner Tyler Reddick, Stage 2 winner Chase Elliott, and your Stage 3 and race winner was the number 11 car, who said he's going to be retiring in 27, but he wins back-to-back, Denny Hamlin. Sunday afternoon racing for the Cup Series at a sold-out track in Michigan looked like an absolutely huge crowd, which I love to see. This is one of those tracks where we only go there once a year, and the fans are proving time and time again, if you have one date on the schedule at a track, the fans are going to show up and it's going to be absolutely packed. Totally sold out grandstands, totally sold out infield. We love to see that. I did not see most of this race live because I was participating in a pride parade with my company. So walking through the parade right through a neighborhood here in my city, we were throwing out candy, we were handing out flags, we were getting laid by other people in the crowd, we were getting beads, all around just a super, super fun day. If you've never been to a Pride Parade, I would highly suggest it. The energy is absolutely off the track, off the skis, off the skis, it's off the whatevers. It was a ton of fun, and it's my second year in a row doing it, and I will be back for a third next year. As we mentioned, Denny Hamlin, your race winner, he started on the pole, but he decided to make some adjustments overnight, so he started all the way back in the rear of the field and really just had to grind his way through this thing. Connor Zilich, man, this guy wrecks himself again in the first stage and barely even made it 20 laps before he's wrecked out of the race. So this is a guy who... he sounds totally dejected on the radio. He is not getting any experience in the Cup Series next-gen car because he keeps wrecking out in the first stage. Like, bro, you've got to log laps. You've got to figure out how this car drives in dirty air. You've got to figure out how it drives when it's up in front of the field. This guy honestly is not ready, and it's a combination of him being not ready and Trackhouse being bad. Just bad. I don't know what to say about Zilich, but a guy who looked absolutely untouchable in the O'Reilly series, he can't even finish races here in the Cup Series. They've got to figure that out at Trackhouse Racing. Early on in this race, it was a little bit of a wreck fest. So Michigan is probably the fastest non-super speedway track on the schedule. And it sounded like the tires were not wearing at all, so there was no rubber being laid down on the track. So the cars were just very light on their feet. And anytime you have cars that are light on their feet, you get a little bit of air underneath the car or you hit a bump and you're not on it just right, the car's going to get loose, come up, and go around on you. So really, really tough track here at Michigan. Oof, this I don't love to see. So Carson Hocevar is back to being Carson Hocevar. He was a total animal in this thing, and you know, this is his home track. He wants to put on a good show for the fans. But at a certain point, this guy was just being a menace and a missile. He took out Tyler Reddick. First do not finish of the year for Tyler Reddick. And because of that, he had an absolutely awful points day, which we'll talk about in the standings. Later on in this thing, Hocevar continues to be a total missile. And he almost dumps Larson. Then he almost dumps Bubba. Wow, I mean, this guy is just trying way, way too hard, and that team's got to tell him to calm down a little bit because I don't want to hear this. He's an Earnhardt in the making. He's just reckless. There's no doubt about it that this guy has talent, But just because you have talent and speed doesn't mean you cannot go out there and just run people over, be reckless, get yourself loose, almost take out Larson and Bubba and ruin their days. Dial it back a little bit. Let's get settled down and let's finish races without wrecking other people. Oof. Speaking of wrecking other people, Christopher Bell had one of the most brutal hits I have ever seen. And a lot of other people that I've talked to have said that this was one of the worst crashes in the next gen era, or even in the last 10 to 15 years or so. So Chase Elliott is right on the inside of Christopher Bell. His car ends up hitting a bump out there on turn three, gets loose off his feet, and Bell just gets wiped out, front right of the car, hits the safer barrier, totally caves in and collapses. And then to make matters worse, before that, Chase Elliott's car was going to turn left and spin out, and Elliott said he was just going to let it spin, but then the car just snapped. So something with the tires or the air or something just gripped, and something broke. I don't know what it was, but his car just took literally a 90-degree right turn, slams Bell into the wall, then Elliott's car whips around, it gives him a double whammy. And man, Mike Ford says that Christopher Bell's hit was the largest hit in the next gen era, and since at least 2015, as far as Delta 5 goes, and I had to look this up, so Delta 5 means change of velocity. So the hardest hit with a change of velocity going into the wall since 2015, so 11 years. Right after the race, Joe Gibbs come out and says Christopher Bell is dealing with wrist and ankle injuries, and they will have to evaluate him during the week. So it came out a couple of days later that Christopher Bell has a sprained or broken wrist, one of the two. Either it's a very light break or a very severe sprain, but he is going to go ahead and give it a go at Pocono. And I think it was a broken wrist. I'm going back to the notes here, and yes, it was. It was a broken wrist for Christopher Bell. So you saw him get out of that car. Thankfully, the window net came down. He was able to get out and walk away, but he was hobbling really hard, and he looked like he was in a lot of pain. After that big hit for Christopher Bell and Chase Elliott, we had a 22-minute delay to repair the safer barrier. So when the safer barrier gets hit, it's supposed to just like absorb all of the energy, suck in a little bit, and then it usually pops out. But this hit was so hard that they actually had to spend time out there rewelding, rewiring, doing whatever they do to the inside of that safer barrier to get it safe to race. So going green to round out stage three of this race, Denny Hamlin had worked his way all the way back up to the front, and he has an absolutely power move on the race-winning restart, and he sets sail. He was picking up near the end of this thing 0.3 seconds a lap and absolutely running away with it. So another one of those Joe Gibbs Racing rocket ships given to Denny Hamlin. One of the oddest things on this race was William Byron. He was driving up in the top five, having a really great day. And all of a sudden I just see him dropping in the standings, and he ended up falling all the way back to 18th place due to either a low tire, a cording tire, or something, and he just had to limp that thing to the finish line, and man, Judge G is not happy with that for the 24 car of William Byron. So Denny Hamlin, last to first again for the second week in a row, and he becomes the 9th all-time winningest driver, and this post-race celebration was absolutely awesome. He was given a flag that has had his stylized 11, and it had the stylized 8 from RCR Racing that Kyle Busch was using this year. So it had a 1 and an 8 on it. And that was really cool to see. And this was the race where Denny Hamlin passes Kyle Busch all time. Excuse me, he ties Kyle Busch all time with 63 wins. So congratulations, Denny Hamlin, tying Kyle Busch. And Hamlin gave him a really nice shout-out post-race. So you can tell that everyone's still thinking and mourning about the passing of Kyle Busch. Rounding out this Cup Series race, really great drive for Erik Jones. He finished in second. Bubba Wallace also with another great drive and a huge points day, taking third. So to recap this thing, Denny Hamlin back to the front, dominates the third stage, and this was an absolute war of attrition at Michigan. All right, moving off of our NASCAR coverage and into some other series. First up on the schedule, we are going to recap Formula One Monaco Grand Prix. And as most of you know, I am not an F1 guy, so I solicited some celebrity recap, and we got some recap here that we're going to read word for word. And this comes from a very close friend of the podcast, LG. So LG's got the breakdown here for Monaco. Let's get right into it. We've got here, and I quote, "It can be nicely summed up with Charles in the wall from a podium position, Kim Kardashian snubbing Martin Brundle during the gridwalk, and Pierre Gasly celebrating P3 in a car because the team didn't tell him he had a 10-second penalty that dropped him to 7th. Oh, and for a brief moment, Cadillac got their first ever F1 points until Checo got a penalty. Long story short, absolute clusterfuck made a usually boring race actually exciting." End quote. So that tells me a whole heck of a lot about this race, but it doesn't tell me who the winner was. So I had to look this up, and this was not included in your race recap. The winner was Kimi Antonelli, and if I am not mistaken, this is his 5th race win in a row. So that's your 1-minute recap of the F1 race from Monaco. Next series that we are going to recap is the IndyCar Series. First, before we recap the race from Worldwide Technology Raceway in Gateway, which is in Madison, Illinois, they advertise it like it's in St. Louis. This is the most confusing race on the schedule for IndyCar. We've got to figure out how to market this thing. But, like I said, Christian Rasmussen signed a multiple-year deal with Ed Carpenter Racing. So congratulations for Christian. Love to see that for ECR. Alrighty, let's get into that recap for Worldwide Technology Raceway. This is a 1 mile short oval down there in wherever they are, and this is a really fun night race. Unfortunately, the night race was a very late night race. This one was scheduled for, like we said last week, well into the evening on Sunday after 9 p.m. Eastern. And what happened was they ended up actually moving the race up a little bit because they wanted to try to beat some rain that was moving through the area. Coming in to the start of this race, Ericsson was having an absolutely amazing run in this first stint. He was plus 11 positions on the first 48 laps and drove that thing all the way to the lead. So that was really, really fun to see Marcus Ericsson drive that thing from 12th all the way up to 1st. Everybody pits around lap 110 because there is a threat of rain on the horizon, and this thing was getting close to being halfway, which, as some of you may or may not know, once you get halfway in an IndyCar race, if they have to call it due to weather, that race is official. So Marcus Ericsson continues to be up front after that pit cycle. And Rinus VK's team does a fantastic job of jumping him a number of spots on that pit stop. As we said, they went to the pits around lap 110. And then unfortunately, Graham Rahal gets up into the rubber marbles and causes a caution with a decent amount of laps to go on lap 115. So after that happens, we did start to get a little bit of sprinkles. We were getting rain on the aero screens, which means that we started just riding around. So they actually rode around for 20 laps, trying to make sure that they weren't going to lose the track. You have to do this because you've got to keep the heat in the track to keep any little bit of moisture that falls to just evaporate, because once that track cools down and you let the rain just sit on the track and puddle, then you're going to really be in a rain delay and you're going to have to bring out those jet dryers. So after those 20 laps riding around, they did go ahead and bring the red flag and bring the cars down to pit road. After that rain delay, we ended up going back green at 11:20 Eastern time. So already a very, very late night there on the East Coast. And honestly, for me, as I mentioned earlier, I was out at the Pride Parade all day. I went out with some friends for dinner afterwards, and man, this thing went green at like 10:20 my time, and I'm like, oh, I really hope this stays green, and if it does, I'm going to see the end of it. But if it does not, I'm probably going to have to tap out and check out the rest of this thing in the morning. And tap out we did. So 11:30 Eastern time, past 10:30 here Central time, we had another yellow flag for rain, and I was texting with LG, who provided our exquisite Formula One recap from Monaco. We're both tapping out. We've got work in the morning, and we both agree, no spoilers until the morning. So I wake up in the morning, I watch the 30-minute race recap at the gym, I'm on the treadmill, I'm jogging, I'm walking, I'm basically watching the race in a 30-minute bite-sized recap. And coming down to the end of this thing, we'll just cut to the chase here. Christian Rasmussen was in a battle with Joseph Newgarden for the win, and your king of short ovals, Joseph Newgarden, brings home the win from Gateway. What a treat, man. What a treat for the fans who stuck around for this one. It looked like the crowd thinned out quite a bit, which, hell, I don't blame them, man. It was after midnight at the track. I probably would have been long gone myself, because you've got to make that drive home. You've got to be up, and you've got to be at work making the payola so you can go to the next track the next weekend. Funniest thing about this one was in the post-race press conference, we've got Joseph Newgarden saying he was confused. So at one point, he thought Christian Rasmussen was a lap down, and it was Rossi on the lead lap. So when he didn't realize he was racing Rasmussen, he eventually just let him go so that he didn't have what he thought was a lap down car in his way. But then he felt like Rasmussen was just kind of in his way, so he ended up passing him back, still not knowing that he was on the lead lap. And then he said he was even surprised when he saw Christian on the podium. So this is amazing. Like, how does Joseph Newgarden's team not get him this information that the driver that just passed him for the lead and the race win? So very, very funny there at the end of that IndyCar race. So fun race. Unfortunately, it was bogged down by quite a bit of yellow flag, a red flag, and some rain. IndyCar coming up next. We have an off week, and then we're right in my backyard at Road America. So Road America on Sunday, June 21st, is your next race on the IndyCar schedule. Shifting back over to NASCAR, we're going to do Baby G Reads the Standings. So we've got Tyler Reddick in first place with 669 points. Denny Hamlin in second with 618, and he is now only 51 points back from Reddick. So monster day again from Hamlin, and the first really bad points day of the season for Tyler Reddick. Third place, Ryan Blaney. Fourth place, Chase Elliott. Then we've got Ty Gibbs, Kyle Larson, Carson Hocevar, and Chris Buescher in eighth. Ninth place, Daniel Suarez. 10th place, Christopher Bell, down 3 after that really, really hard hit at Michigan. Bubba Wallace up 4 in 11th. Then we've got William Byron, Chase Briscoe, Shane Van Gisbergen, Brad Keselowski, and Austin Cindric in 16th, rounding out your current Chase playoff drivers. And then 17th place, just 2 points. Excuse me. Just 3 points outside is Joey Logano. So those are your NASCAR Cup Series standings after the Michigan race. We are currently, we're into it this season. That was race 15 from Michigan. And up next on the schedule, we've got Pocono. So Truck Series is off. O'Reilly Series on Saturday. The Miller Tech Battery 250 presented by KOA at 4 o'clock Eastern. Cup Series Great American Gateway 400 presented by Vista PA. Visit PA, not Vista Print, which I always thought it was. Visit PA at 3 o'clock Eastern. Your previous winners, 2025 Briscoe, 2024 Blaney, and 2023 Hamlin. That's it for us here on the Big One Podcast. This has been Baby G, Twitter at PodcastBigOne, and emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. We will catch you next week back with the full suite of guys here on the Big One Podcast.